House Judiciary is in session. It's 10 minutes past 1. In attendance, Representative Grunberg, Representative Lynn, Representative Ramirez, Representative Dahlstrom, Representative Holmes' things are here. Representative Coghill has an excused absence, and Representative Samuels is detained in another meeting. Here comes Representative Holmes to rejoin her things. We have two pieces of business today. House Bill 200 and House Bill 227, which is offered by the Minority Leader. We will first take up House Bill 200. Prime sponsor is my right.
My
co-sponsor of this bill, I think Representative Lynn, are you co-sponsor of this bill?
I am. Proudly co-sponsor, put that on the record.
Is a co-sponsor of this bill.
That's right.
So this bill will likely be heard and held in committee. We will not be adopting the CS, no matter how hard you try. Every effort will be supported.
The record should reflect that there's another member on this committee who's a co-sponsor, and it ain't you.
Thank you.
Was that three to one, is it?
Four. So is this the whole committee?
Well, present.
Present. That's about all that matters right now.
What is you? I'm sorry.
Yes. So, Kelly, if you would, Kelly Hibbert's with us, if you will take us through this briefly. And then, gentlemen, as you come before us to testify, if you won't love your bill too much, we will dispense with everybody's time in a appropriate fashion. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Kelly Huber, staff to represent Nancy Dahlstrom. And I will be brief so that you folks can listen to public testimony. But the CS before you does allow a presumption for certain diseases and illnesses for firefighters and first responders. The changes in the CS from the original draft is that we've kind of narrowed the pool, trying to bring into line some of the concerns that folks have that it's too broad-reaching. So the bill before you makes sure that folks understand that it's not mandatory. It is an optional program. It also says that for a firefighter to be eligible for the presumption, they have to have 7 years, and they also have to gain their Firefighter One certificate. It just narrows the pool a little bit. Some of your volunteer firefighters that may only go to one, you know, seen a year or something like that would not probably fit then underneath the presumption. The bill is actually quite self-explanatory. There are certain diseases listed on page 2 that would be covered under the presumption. These are diseases that have had some link to the occupation of being a firefighter or a first responder, and that first responder's on the next page. But the sponsor brings forward the bill because she believes that there are certain people that choose to go into occupations, and sometimes those occupations have an inherent risk. And this is one of those occupations that she would like to see their risk be acknowledged through some unfortunate and, of course, you never want it to happen, but an illness that does derive from their workplace. So this bill just allows them to have that presumption should an illness or something ever happened to them, that they would fall and be able to go through the workman's comp system. And I can answer any questions, or of course, you have the sponsor that could answer any questions. And then we have firefighters that I'm sure would answer any questions.
Thank you. Seeing no questions. Are there any questions? Seeing no questions. Thank you, Todd.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
All right. Let's see if we can take care of the people that are online first. Mark Jones, are you there?
I am.
Go ahead, please. Introduce yourself and any affiliation that you have that's relevant to the bill.
Okay. My name is Mark Jones, and I'm testifying on behalf of myself. Should I go ahead?
Yes, please.
Okay. Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. Again, my name is Mark Jones, and I'm the Chief Safety Officer for the Anchorage Fire Department. Today, however, I'm not here representing the official views of the municipality of Anchorage or the Anchorage Fire Department, but rather my own views developed during my 32 years in the fire service. In my role as Chief Safety Officer with the Anchorage Fire Department, I am responsible for the overall safety of the members of the department assigned to my platoon. I am here to testify in favor of House Bill 200, This legislation provides important safeguards for firefighters and emergency service workers. We've made great strides in recent years in terms of employee health and safety protection in the firefighting and emergency service industries. Physical fitness is now considered a necessity in this industry. The Anchorage Fire Department, as well as others around the state and country, have implemented aggressive physical standards and programs to ensure that our employees are in the best physical condition possible. Improvements in protection, such as self-contained breathing apparatus, engineering protections and healthcare devices, and barriers such as gloves, masks, and safety glasses have all provided a tremendous reduction in the number of exposures to diseases and known carcinogens. These aggressive prevention programs are working, and I want to emphasize prevention. However, despite these improvements, there continues to be instances in which these workers are exposed. In addition, the physical demands placed on the body during the course of firefighting operations, coupled with a long-term exposure to low levels of carbon monoxide formed during the combustion process, all lead to continued high levels of heart and lung diseases in firefighters. One of the most common exposure routes and one of the most difficult to address is that of integumentary system exposure. This type of exposure occurs when the skin comes in contact with known carcinogens contained in the smoke formed during a fire. We have yet to be able to develop a set of protective firefighting clothing that can withstand the heat encountered with while fighting a fire and at the same time completely isolate the user from these toxic byproducts. Essentially, this repeated exposure of the skin to smoke-containing carcinogens over a multi-year period eventually leads to the likelihood of cancer. This is often manifested in cancers in the areas of the greatest smoke exposure concentration, the groin and armpits. This is one reason why the firefighters are so much more susceptible to lymphoma, breast, and prostate cancers. Clearly, given the seriousness of these diseases, it is my personal goal and the goal of all those in the fire and emergency services to reduce the occurrence of these illnesses in our occupations to zero. Until this day arrives, though, we need the protections contained in House Bill 200. We owe this to the men and women who risk their lives every day to protect others. We owe it to them to ensure that provide protections for them and their families during their times of greatest need, particularly when this time of need is likely a direct result of an exposure received at work. Our goal is prevention, but a safety net is needed. Thank you for your consideration and your time, and I'm open for any questions. And I do have a personal story that I might depart if the board wishes.
Thank you, Mr. Jones. Are there any questions for Mark Jones?
Thank you.
Thank you very much, sir. Next, if we go to Rod Harris, please.
Hello, can you hear me?
Very well.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, my name is Rod Harris. I'm calling from Eagle River, Alaska, and I'm calling on behalf of the Alaska professional firefighters in the state. Mr. Chairman and the members of your committee, I'd like to thank you for the opportunity to address you all today. In spite of improvements to the safety gear and the training, much to the sense that Mr. Jones just spoke of, firefighters are still regularly exposed to toxic environments when protecting lives and property in the state. Alaskan firefighters are subjected to uncontrolled environments every time we respond to a call for help. The nature of our work calls for firefighters to mitigate emergencies in extreme weather, during natural disasters, and in toxic environments. As of this year, 41 other states have enacted some sort of presumptive legislation to protect their emergency responders, and the men and women serving this great state as first responders need that same protection for their peers, as their peers in other locations. Thanks for your time today, everybody, and thanks for supporting Alaska's first responders.
Thank you very much. Are there questions for Mr. Harris? Seeing none, we thank you for your time today. Can we go to Mike Davidson?
Hi, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. This is Mike Davidson. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, this is Mike Davidson. I'm representing the Alaska Professional Firefighters. I'm also a firefighter and paramedic in Anchorage, Alaska. I appreciate you guys taking the time to hear this bill today. It's certainly an important piece of legislation, and I appreciate the many of the members of this committee that are supporting this legislation. House Bill 200 represents an important fix to a hole in the safety net that exists for emergency responders in Alaska. Currently, our members are frequently exposed to known carcinogens, contagious diseases, and other hazards as part of their occupation. These hazardous exposures are routine, however unpredictable for us. they occur on a regular basis in a way that we have very little control or predictability over, because we're called to emergency scenes where we don't have the luxury of pre-assessing the scene or the patients that we may encounter. Unlike other healthcare or emergency occupations where people have the ability to have some insight into the things they may be exposed to, we often don't have that insight. As Chief Jones pointed out, we've taken every engineering step possible to try and prevent these things. And believe me, I'll personally tell you, it's the goal of everyone in the Alaskan and the American Fire Service to one day eradicate all of these diseases within our fellow employees. I would love nothing better than to tell you that one day we'll successfully pass this legislation and that one day a few years from now we'll never use it again, because it's clearly not our goal to have people get these illnesses. However, as it currently stands, we unfortunately have members get these illnesses, many times where the only causal trace that we can draw is to their employment. These causes are frequently difficult to trace back for the purposes of workers' compensation, however, because they may not be from a single exposure or a single event, but rather a chronic exposure over a period of years and years to various known carcinogens or diseases. In these cases, these employees need the protections contained within House Bill 200 because, unfortunately, for most of us, these will be terminal events, and in the final years of their life, we need to have the ability to provide protections for them and their family. These are protections that wouldn't be provided by the private health insurance. As many of us know, the private health insurance is certainly a good safety net that's important for all of us, but it doesn't provide for things such as living expenses for someone's family while they're unable to work. With that said, I'd just like to close by saying that I'm certainly supportive of House Bill 200. I appreciate all the support within this committee for House Bill 200, and I'd stand for any questions from the committee.
Thank you. I have a question. Mike, you got a young one there?
I do have one. I apologize. I can't be with you in person, but I got an eight-month-old I'm taking care of up here.
Good job.
Very nice.
I thought that was the next witness.
Mike, there's some questions here. Your bill, your issue enjoys broad support in this committee. We thank you very much for your time this afternoon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. I don't see anybody else online. Let's go to Jeff Graves and Dominic Lozano. If you both, fellas, if you both want to come up here, you're more than welcome to.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Jeff Briggs. I'm down here from Anchorage representing the Alaska Professional Firefighter Association. And actually, I'd just like to make myself available for questions if it pleases the chair.
Dominic, do you want to introduce yourself?
For the record, Dominic Lozano, Fairbanks, Alaska, and president of the Fairbanks Firefighter Association.
Is Mark Vargas, he's part of firefighting also. His brother Eric is one and just got appointed. His son that just got appointed to be the new regent. We're really excited about that.
Mark Dragas is president of the Alaska Central Fire.
That's right.
Right. Yeah. Outstanding. Just it's a heck of a family. Great family. Are there any questions for these two gentlemen?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Grunberg.
As we're going along, I'm looking at stuff, so I may ultimately have a question or two.
Representative Grunberg, we anticipate a number of amendments to this very complicated issue. Gentlemen, thank you. Is there any questions for these?
I have one here.
Oh, my.
You can show it, but I'm not going to offer it.
Yes. Interesting. Very thoughtful. Gentlemen, thank you. Compelling testimony. We appreciate that. Mr. Rosecki, you're just here for questions? Okay, great. Let's close public testimony at this time. I want to recognize our friend Representative Samuels came in some time ago. Feel to recognize him. Committee discussion on the bill? The chair would entertain a motion.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Lentz.
It's my pleasure to.
Hang on a second. Susan, do we need to adopt this version?
If you wanted to adopt the E version as a work draft, then yes.
I was turned right to the A. I apologize.
Where are we?
I need to. Vice Chair, would you adopt the E version? I was turned to the wrong version. I apologize.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to move the CS for House Bill number 200, version E.
And I'll object for an explanation.
Attached physical notes.
All right, we have a version E before us. There's an objection. Representative Ruenberg, are there any differences in the E version?
Mr. Chairman.
Hi, Kelly.
Hi. Representative Ruenberg, the changes that I described are the E version, so I made sure to explain to you what is in the new CS before you.
Okay.
Okay, thank you.
All right, we have the E version. Is the objection maintained?
No.
Okay, seeing none, we have the E version before us. The chair would entertain a motion to move it.
Chairman, go ahead.
Dahlstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move the CS for House Bill number 200, version E, with attached physical notes and individual recommendations.
I have one question, if I may ask.
Late.
Kelly, thank you. And this is for any of the other folks who may. It's the very last section. If the exposure occurred before the effective date of the act, as I understand it, this is exposure to a condition, and the condition may occur, the exposure may occur over a long period of time. And what I'm wondering on is a technical matter, Mr. Chair. A court might, or a carrier, might interpret that last phrase as requiring the entire exposure to occur before the effect. That doesn't make any sense. I just want to be sure you're talking about if any or all of the exposure occurred, as I understand. I'm not very hard. Maybe Representative Holmes. I'm sort of, Representative Holmes, I'm kind of talking to you through the chair.
I apologize.
I want to be sure we have as broad a coverage as possible here.
Through the chair, Representative Gruber, according to our legal department, which I've discussed this section with, the claims made are essentially, we need to make sure that they are from the effective date forward. But the exposure, because as long as they are meeting the presumption that's set in this, so the 7 years, the firefighter one, and all that's good, then the exposure from their work is included. It's the claim date forward, though. No claims that have ever been in the past can be brought up, you know, in the future.
Okay? That's fine. I appreciate that clarification. Thank you. I remove my objection.
All right. With that,
you have a motion on the table.
The motion was on the table. You had objected, then I gathered, to version E.
Removed that.
The objection has been removed from version E because you objected to version A. Then I assume that was an objection to version E, just for the record, Susan?
No, it was an objection to the motion to move the bill from committee.
Okay, I see.
No objection to anything.
Put that in writing.
That's Bill 200 moves from committee. Gentlemen, telling.
Great.
We're happy to help you. Very good. Hey, guys. Next up is House Bill 227. I flagged this when it was right across the lineup. It's nice to see. I flagged this when it was read across because a couple of the sections seemed it was appropriate to have House Judiciary touch the bill. I hope that the minority leader is enjoying quality time with the family, and it's a very difficult time for her. We're happy to have you here in her place, and our intention is to hear this bill and move it from committee. It wasn't to hold it, but just to touch it and make sure that it was appropriate. If you would take us through the bill, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Lisa Weisler, staff to Representative Petula, who does send her regrets that she couldn't be here herself. However, we have Jesse Keel here from Senator Elton's office. Senator Elton is carrying the bill on the Senate side, and Mr. Keel can give you the introduction to the bill and answer any questions.
Lisa, Chair.
Yeah, hi.
Mm-hmm. For the record, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Jesse Keel. I am staff to Senator Kim Elton, representing Senate District B here in Capital City, and for the moment honored to be a temporary adjunct to the staff of Representative Esther Tula. The bill before you, House Bill 227, would enact the Uniform Money Services Act here in Alaska. The bill ensures safety and soundness in certain financial institutions that are used by Alaskans and visitors to our state who don't use banks. For clarity, Mr. Chairman, this bill doesn't touch banks. They are regulated fairly thoroughly elsewhere in the law and are not the subject here. The bill regulates primarily money transmitters. The largest corporations, the ones with which most folks would be familiar, have names like Western Union or MoneyGram, Travelex, et cetera. There's a significant small industry component. These tend to be niche operators who service particular countries or regions of the United States, and would be commonly found here in Alaska, Mr. Chairman, in areas that serve a lot of cruise ship travelers and the crew members on those cruise ships, in fish processing towns that see significant seasonal labor, folks who don't tend to open a bank account to wire money or write checks home. Mr. Chairman, the bill is primarily safety and soundness regulation. It was requested by the industry. We know that Alaskans and visitors to our state have been victimized by phony money transmitters who have taken money but never delivered. This bill, by requiring licensure in advance, would place a prior restraint on those bad actors. The bill addresses, as I say, two industries, both of which are of some concern to the federal government because of the risk posed for both money laundering through money transmitters and currency exchangers, and in the case of money transmitters, the risk of terrorist financing. The federal government encourages states to work with them by licensing money services businesses, and this bill ensures law enforcement coordination between the state and federal government to make sure that these businesses, the good actors, are not abused by people who avoid banks because they want to avoid scrutiny. That will no longer be possible with the enactment of the Uniform Act. The bill, Mr. Chairman, is revenue neutral to the state. We used the self-funding receipt-supported services language that is we commonly think of as occupational licensing language. We brought over to this section, which would be regulated by the Division of Banking and Securities. The bill has support from a consortium of large money transmitting companies, from an association of small money transmitters, from the Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development, a consumer advocacy group, the Bankers Association, and one of the major cruise lines. Mr. Chairman, I believe you have one amendment that would bring the bill a little closer, more closely in conformance with the Uniform Act in response to a recent Supreme Court decision. And otherwise, I am available for any questions you may have.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I understand we also have other people to testify on the phone.
Representative Bloomberg, we have Mark Davis, the director of the Division of Banking, is available for questions. We have a gentleman named Grant Callow from Anchorage, who is
a commissioner.
He's speaking on behalf of himself, and he's also the member of the National Conference of Commissioners of Uniform State Laws.
I will ask, now is he going to testify or just for questions?
Doesn't indicate, but
I thought, we've talked with Grant, and I thought it was just for questions. I'd like to ask either Mr. Keel or Mr. Davis or Mr. Callow this. Mr. Keel, you said a minute ago, brings it more completely into conformity with the Uniform Act. Is this in any manner out of conformity with the Uniform Act, and if so, any danger that it wouldn't be interpreted uniformly?
Through the chair, Representative Gruenberg, there are a few differences, most of them small, between this and the Uniform Act as originally drafted by the Conference of Commissioners on Uniform State Laws. The issue with the amendment that the chairman has, Representative, is one of a certain category of bank subsidiaries. People call them rent-a-banks, and they're not currently doing money transmission here in Alaska. In consultation with the Division of Bank and Securities, this very narrow category was carved out of the definition of bank that's present in the Uniform Act. Banks are exempt. So this would have regulated them should they someday, theoretically, have started transmitting money in Alaska. There was a recent U.S. Supreme Court decision, Wachovia v. Waters, which strictly limited the ability of states to regulate bank securities. In response to that Supreme Court decision, Representative, Mr. Chairman, the sponsors thought it best to put back the original definition as written by the Uniform Law Commissioners. That's what the amendment, which I believe has not yet been offered, would do. The other significant difference, Representative, with the Uniform Act as drafted, the Uniform Act had three sort of units: money transmitters, check cashers, and currency exchangers. The Alaska bill, the bill before you today, does not regulate check cashers. And quite simply, you can't launder money by cashing a check. You can't finance terrorists by cashing a check. And there's really little or no safety and soundness risk, because if you walk into a bankrupt check casher and they don't have any cash to give you for your check, you're going to walk out with your check in hand. So we didn't see, the sponsor did not see significant risk to the public that needed to be addressed through this Uniform Act. And the Uniform Act is designed, as you'll note in the comments to the Uniform Act, the NCUSL, the Conference of Commissioners, makes available. It's designed to be modular. A state could adopt any one or all three of the pieces.
Do we have adopted?
I don't believe I included the extensive commentaries by NCUSL in the packet, no.
Mr. Chair, with that, I would like to ask Mr. Davis a question.
Mr. Davis, are you on the line?
Sorry, I just unmuted. This is Mr. Davis, Mr. Chairman. I am online from Anchorage, and thank you for the opportunity to appear.
It's a pleasure to have you before our committee. We thank you for having such a knowledgeable person before us. Representative Gruenberg would like to test your wits.
No, I know Mark, and his wit is far greater than mine and his intellect, too. I will not go there. Mr. Davis, are you familiar with the Wachovia case?
Yes, the case is actually Waters versus Wachovia. If I could briefly summarize, the issue before the U.S. Supreme Court was whether a state could regulate a mortgage company that was a operating subsidiary of a national bank, and operating subsidiaries are not subject to supervision by states under the office of the controller of the currency. The U.S. Supreme Court agreed with that, but explicitly noted that affiliates of a national bank can be subject to state regulation. This bill is reworded so that it will not cover a bank or an operating subsidiary of a bank.
My question really goes to the Waters case. As the person probably most familiar with the banking laws in the state, I hope, do we have to change any of our laws? I'm going to ask you two questions. Number one, do we have to change any of our banking laws to conform with the Wachovia case?
Through the chair, Representative Gruenberg, at the present time, no, because we have not exercised any supervision over any subsidiaries of banks, of national banks, and the couple of the national banks that operate in this state have decided to operate through affiliates, which are subject to our scrutiny.
Second question. Are you going to, and I don't need an answer now if you decline to answer, are you preparing or are you thinking of preparing any legislation to extend state jurisdiction to the limits permitted by Wachovia?
Representative Gruenberg, through the chair, HB 162, the mortgage bill, is designed to carve out operating subsidiaries of national banks to the extent that they are made exempt by federal law, so that bill would track changes in federal law, because it's possible there may be changes. So what we're trying to do with all new legislation is to provide flexibility for the legislature so that these things don't have to be revisited. I think the language in the Uniform Act right now is sufficient. I do not think there will be state supervision of subsidiaries in the near future.
My question, I think you may have answered, but just through the chair, was sort of the opposite of that. I generally like to see our state regulate to the extent permitted by the Constitution. And I'm talking about long-arm statutes and all that sort of thing, so that we have a good handle for regulatory purposes on businesses that do business in the state, and we can make certain that our customers and businesses are protected here. I'm wondering, are there areas where we could extend our jurisdiction in the area of banking that are now that will be permitted as a result of the holding in the Wachovia case?
Representative Grunberg, to the chair, I don't think so, but I agree with your comment. That is the Deferred Deposit Act that the legislature passed in 2005 covers internet operations, and we've been successful in enforcing that act against companies operating in this state only via the internet, given our long-arm statute, so that we are trying to assert that jurisdiction on behalf of consumers in every bill we look at.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. The part that interests me is section 104. So it's a bill sponsored, help me, or Mr. Davis. I'm familiar, like anybody in this room, when the ships come and we see a lot of folks here that arrived that are sending money by wire overseas back home, and so I appreciate the bill sponsor's effort. Mr. Davis, can you just take us through the requirements for security for these folks? I just want to better understand the nature of the security, the surety bond that has to be filed, and the inability of a money transmitter, the ability of a money transmitter to not act in good faith is what I'm interested in. So the security piece is something that that interested me a great deal.
This is on page 5?
Yeah, I'm on page 5, line 20. Can either the bill sponsor speak to that or Mr. Davis?
Mr. Chairman, I'd be happy to. The security requirements requirement in section 104, beginning on page 5, line 20, speaks primarily to the risk of loss to the consumer should a money transmitter close its doors, go bankrupt, close up shop, disappear. It is written with some flexibility, and actually on the advice of the regulator, Mr. Davis, with a lower security requirement than what the sort of the Model Act began at, although the Model Act flags that as an optional item for states. It is written with some flexibility so that a transmitter might post a bond, might post a certificate of deposit, might post a tangible asset that otherwise would be acceptable to the department for the benefit of consumers should the transmitter close up shop with outstanding obligations. And that's primarily how that works. Mr. Chairman, you will note that the security requirement is in the amount of $25,000. An additional $5,000 security is required for each location. This would be apply primarily to the larger money transmitters who have a number of authorized delegates, storefronts. You can buy certain money transfers in some of the grocery stores around state. But it was written at the lowest level that the regulator thought would protect consumers so as not to interfere with the competitive environment in the state.
Okay. Is that pretty thorough? Go ahead, Representative Grunberg.
I must confess, with the other stuff going around here, I haven't studied the bill, and I apologize to you. That seems the figures on lines 20 to 24 on page 5 do seem very low, even though they can be increased on page 6, lines 13 to 16, because $5,000 is very small. One transaction and a defalcation in one transaction could wipe the $5,000 out.
Mr. Chairman, if I may. Through the chair, Representative Grunberg, this section operates together with section 107, which you'll find on page 8, line 25. It's a very short section. It's a net worth requirement. So, Mr. Chairman, the money transmitters are required to maintain a net worth, a positive net worth, and and this is reported on in their regular reports to the regulator. There are receivership provisions in the bill. The regulator is able, just through monitoring the ongoing reports, to make sure that a money transmitter getting into bad trouble isn't going to leave Alaskans or its customers here in Alaska in the lurch.
Mr. Chair, if I may continue. Mr. Davis and Mr. Callow, I would like to know what are the figures in the Uniform Act and what the division and the commissioners feel about the levels that we have here on page 5.
To the Chair, Representative Gruber, this is Mr. Davis. we supported the $25,000 based on our experience with the deferred deposit lenders, because we found in this state it's almost very, very difficult to get a bond now over $25,000, and we were sensitive to the issue of not wanting to put small money transmitters out of business. And those small money transmitters tend to do relatively small business. And of course, but we did support putting the maximum of $500,000 in if we deem that necessary. Actually, there's really two different groups here. They're the very large companies like MoneyGram or Western Union, who have more than enough resources to pay you back. And then there's the small companies, which right now you have no protection when you use them. So this is in a sense a compromise based on our experience with the other act.
Representative Druenberg, this is Grant Callow.
Hi, Grant.
I'm not sure you can hear me. Hi. I'm looking through my documentation here. I can't remember. I'm hoping that Mr. Keel, if he's still there, might know what those numbers were, but I can just tell you this, that the Chicago Office of the Commission on Uniform Laws looked at this act with the changes that were made in it. This is prior to the Waters versus Wachovia decision, as I understand it, and approved all the changes that were made. Obviously, this act was drafted as a uniform act and was intended to be uniform, but with the understanding that states could, based on certain policy decisions made within the state, adjust those levels. So I can tell you that unless there have been changes to those numbers since the bill was drafted, and Mr. Keel could respond to that, I'm sure. I think that from the point of view of the Chicago office, they didn't have any trouble with those numbers.
Through the chair, Mr. Keel, were those numbers changed?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Gruenberg, those numbers have not been changed since the Chicago office reviewed them. The security requirements in the Model Act were twice what we placed in the Alaska Act. So it was in the model, it recommended 50,000 plus 10,000 for location up to a maximum of 250. The net worth requirement reads in the Alaska Act as it does in the Model Act, $25,000 net worth.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Jesse, I'm in total support of this bill. So, but my interest is just it's unique enough of an event to go to a bank, give them cash, put it on deposit, be able to go back anytime you want and extract that cash. And it's always that nature of that transaction has just always fascinated me, that the whole nature of banking, you know, and money in a vault, and then you write a check or do whatever you want against it. Here, like in the community at Juneau, because I see how many people pour off of those ships, that English is clearly not their first language. I, when Senator Bundy and I made that trip to Arkansas, I happened to sit next to a gentleman from Arkansas who sent his firm that he was connected with sent billions of dollars back to Mexico on money. What is this called? Money wire? Not money. Money
transmission.
It's a very large business. Can you talk a little bit about how fees are regulated, how people for whom English is not a first language understand what their rights are, what the commission structure is, how many places, say, in a community like Juneau, where this is probably a service that's taken advantage of, not that they're taking advantage of people, but people take advantage of this kind of a money transmission service, how many of those facilities there would be in a community like this, how many would be a nationally recognized service like Western Union versus, somebody that would set up shop, down here on Franklin or Seward Street that would have an opportunity to take advantage of somebody by having a storefront and then deal less than, honestly, with people who are here for 20 hours, for whom English is not a first language. That was my interest when we flagged this, was to make sure that didn't give somebody an opportunity to prey on more vulnerable people. And are there provisions in this bill that address that without being too draconian, because we don't want to create another situation like what Representative Holmes is correcting in House Bill 217. That's my interest.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd be happy to. Okay. Mr. Chairman, neither the Model Act nor the Alaska Act attempts to regulate fees. This is a competitive industry, Mr. Chairman, with large national and, I believe, multinational corporations and relatively small niche operators coming right down to quite literally mom and pops. It was a husband and wife operation who asked us initially to introduce the bill. The competitive environment, because it is healthy, is keeping fees pretty low, and they are in flux. The market, different companies are responding to one another and attempting to beat one another out in the competitive environment. There are, Mr. Chairman, consumer protections in the bill. The consumer protections have been run through both the Consortium of Large Money Transmitters and the Small Transmitters Association. They are found near the back of the bill in the low 800s. And they amount to a posting, to receipts, and timely transmission minimum requirements and refundability requirements. Rather than run through them in extensive detail, Mr. Chairman, they require every place where you can buy a money transmission, there has to be a sign on the wall. It tells you where you can make complaints. It gives the address and phone number of the Division of Bank and Securities. Every money transmission that's sold has to come, Mr. Chairman, with a receipt that clearly states the fees that were charged. It clearly states, in the case of money that's being transmitted and will be received in another currency, clearly states the exchange rate or the operation, if it floats, if you're not buying today's exchange rate, you're buying the exchange rate when somebody picks up the money, clearly states how it floats and how that works. Mr. Chairman, many of the people who use these services become quite savvy to them. They know how exchange rates operate and when, and they pick the businesses that best serve their interests. The timely transmission requirements set a bare minimum. Again, the competitive environment is such that you can buy what they call one-minute money transfers. Literally, they go into somebody's bank account from the place where you hand over the cash. There is an array and a variety of services available, and the bill, I think, does an excellent job of carefully not interfering with that competitive environment, but giving a consumer all the information they need to make a smart choice that best serves their interests.
Okay. Thank you. I feel a lot better. That's really an excellent explanation. Well done. Any other questions? I have an amendment to offer. Amendment number one. Susan, is E.1? I'll wait till the members have that before. Mm-hmm.
And I'll object for discussion purposes.
Professor, can you tell us about the amendment I'm offering?
Mr. Chairman, in brief, the amendment adds to the definition of a bank. Banks are exempt under the bill before you. And what it adds are what are alternately called rent-a-banks or credit card banks. They refer to a very limited scope of federally recognized banking institution that doesn't have really bank locations per se in the state. They just offer credit cards, in effect. If you need extensive detail, Mr. Davis is more than able to go through it in detail, but this language is in the Uniform Act. We had originally taken it out, and after the Waters v. Wachovia case, a decision by the Supreme Court, it needs to go back in, Mr. Chairman.
Amendment number one is before us. Are any objections?
I'll remove my objection.
All right, I got an amendment through today. I'm psyched.
I got another one through earlier, too.
You can't stop me, Mr. Davis.
Mr. Gruenberg.
You got the other one.
Enough.
You got the other one through, too.
Yeah. Good. Thank you. I'm very psyched. Yeah.
Take quite a few to get up to 37 to 2, buddy.
We seriously, on this bill and labor and commerce too, to some extent, bills like this and insurance bills, most legislators know very little about, and we really particularly trust the knowledge and integrity of the people who come before us. And I know all three of you guys, and have for a long time, and I know that you're people of the highest in intellect and integrity. And so this is really a trust me bill, because I wouldn't know a money transmitter if it bit me in the face.
Representative Gruenberg, it's not this bill. It's the one where six lobbyists get in the way of the bill. The one we dealt with earlier today that troubled me.
I did want to ask one question. Is there any provision in this bill or any part of the Uniform Act that's not in this bill that this committee should be informed of, so we could make at least an informed decision? I'm asking each of you to flag for us anything that we might want to be aware of and discuss.
You're addressing this, Mr. Callow, Mr. Davis, and Mr. Keel, is that right?
Yes, sir.
Okay. And then along those lines, while you're formulating your thoughts, I'm going through the major changes in this bill, and I see that the transmission time of 10 days is set here, as is the posted location, requiring a notice posted at each location that the money services are provided, telling consumers where they can make complaints. Is that going to be formatted through regulation, as far as you know? Is it already in existence? Or
Mr. Davis would answer that.
Mr. Davis, all kidding aside, the people just passed an initiative to try and go for 14-point size type so that you don't buy the wrong flight seeing trip. Working a week or 2 weeks at sea, for your hard-earned money, and then not being clear on where it's being sent, how long it's going to take, and how much of a fee you're going to pay
is
considerably more exposure for hardworking people that are legally allowed to do so in this country. Who sets up the notice? Does the Division of Banking do that, or what? Commerce and Economic Development. Who will regulate that?
Mr. Representative, through the chair, Mr. Davis, Division of Banking and Securities will have regulatory power to set the signage, and we've been doing that with the deferred deposit. And we've adjusted even that over time to make sure that people understand what they're doing and what is at issue. If I could, I'd also like to respond to Representative Gruenberg. Is there anything that I wanted in here that is not, and that is only, that is reciprocity of confidentiality under 06-55-407? Right now, we are required to keep the information confidential of the money transmitter. The only thing I wanted in the act that's not in the act is a provision that would make the money transmitter or money service company keep the information they get from their customers confidential.
Mr. Davis, what's with the 10-day the 10-day allowance for transmission? What takes 10 days?
Well, I think that's in the act, and I think that's a long time. But I think that's a part of the Uniform provision, and I think I would go with that for now, because there may be problems with foreign banks. I mean, this, you have to understand, this is primarily a service for what the U.S. Department of Treasury calls unbanked persons. If you have a bank account and the person you want to send money to in another country has a bank account, the bank will send the money for you. It's when you are on ship and you don't have a bank account where you are that you need to use this service.
Okay. And Jesse, you have a point on that?
Mr. Chairman, to correct one small thing, the 10 days is not in the uniform model. None of the consumer protection provisions found in the 800s section of this act before you today are in the Uniform Act. The Uniform Act was designed to work well with whatever existing consumer protections or new consumer protections a state had in effect or chose to enact. The timely transmission language in this bill, Mr. Chairman, came at the suggestion of the industry. It matches in form and content timely transmission language adopted by both Hawaii and Washington State. Okay. You asked what takes 10 days. Almost nothing.
Okay.
There are a few niche transmitters who literally use family networks. It's the outside absolute limit. The competitive environment really has it going fast.
I understand.
Yeah, it is, Mr. Davis. I just kind of Mr. Krell's right. I mean, I misspoke. I mean, when I meant that, I was really referring to the Washington Uniform Act, which this bill is largely derived from.
Okay. Mr. Callow, any final thoughts? Mr. Davis, we appreciate your point of view. Representative Grunberg, you've got a question?
Yeah.
Amendment number two?
No.
Davis, you had said something, and you were going kind of fast, and I thought it dealt with Section 407 on page 16 that you wanted to have in the bill about confidentiality. Would you
through the chair, I'll be happy to, Representative Grunberg. I'll try to slow down.
Wait. Mr. Davis, is what you wanted to put in the bill, is that in the bill?
No.
Why not?
I think the sponsor decided not to modify the Uniform Act.
Well,
the Uniform Act does not cover the one suggestion I had. You asked me a question, kind of officer of the court, is there anything I'd like to see in the bill? And the answer would be that one provision,
okay,
which would be that I think it would be better if money transmitters had to keep the information they receive from their customers confidential because it can contain bank routing numbers.
Oh, okay. Do the members understand what Mr. Davis is saying here? He is saying that this information that's transmitted may include bank routing numbers that are numbers of your bank accounts, and he wants that to be confidential. I understand that the sponsor didn't want to make that confidential, and I'm wondering why not, through the chair.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Grunberg, it was a change we elected not to make from the Uniform Act. To be clear, bank routing numbers are not transmitted by money transmitters, but were a customer, for instance, to buy what I described as one-minute service, a transfer directly into someone's bank account, the customer brings cash to the counter, the transmission goes directly to a bank account, a bank routing number would be collected for that purpose.
Inquisitive.
And put simply, Mr. Chairman, Representative Grunberg, the sponsors elected not to impose that higher standard than the Uniform Act imposed when introducing the bill.
May I inquire? Mr. Davis, why do you believe it would be good policy to make that information confidential?
Through the chair, Representative Grunberg, it's exactly as Mr. Krell described. For some of these special one-minute transfers, you may provide a bank number either of your own or of a relative to the transmitter so the money can go into that bank account. And that means that the money transmitter now is in possession of a bank account record, and I think bank account records should be kept confidential. I think the Uniform Act didn't anticipate that product in the industry.
Mr. Chair, I am concerned if I have to provide my bank account number and it is not confidential because somebody could steal that. And I'm wondering, in view of the fact that Mr. Davis indicates that when the Uniform Act was drafted, that information or that issue hadn't arisen yet, Apparently, that's something new. Am I right, Mr. Davis?
To the chair, that's my understanding. These are newer. I don't think it's a major flaw in this bill, and I certainly wouldn't want to stop its passage. But I also think that, you know, when it says in 0655407, all information contained in or related to an examination or investigation should be confidential, it should probably just say all information collected from a client or contained in an examination is confidential.
Through the chair, this sounds important. I don't want my bank information released to the public. And Mr. Keel, I was wondering if the sponsor might reconsider its position so we protect the privacy of Alaskans using these services. Through the chair.
Mr. Chairman, might I inquire whether Mr. Ezra Levine from the Money Transmitters Roundtable is on the telephone?
Sure. We don't show him.
No. We have Mr. Stoops here. Does he want to come forward?
Mr. Levine's in, he's got some medical issues.
Maybe we could ask.
I could answer the question.
Could you? I wonder if
maybe Representative Gruber, we should just hold over the minority leader's bill over the interim and work on this.
I'm not anxious to hold it over the interim. Mr. Callow, do you have any thought on this issue?
Through the chair, Representative Grunberg, I don't have a thought on it. My personal opinion, as opposed to, I don't know what the reporter would say about this, the reporter for the original act. My personal opinion is that it seems to me like a good idea. Of course, that does in turn raise then some liability issues and the consequences of revealing that information. But certainly I tend to agree with what you said, Representative Grunberg, that the confidentiality is important. I can't tell you as I sit here whether that issue was specifically addressed in the drafting of the Uniform Act. I certainly appreciate and concur with those who have expressed the opinion. I guess Mr. Davis was the one who said that he'd prefer not to have the act held up for that reason. And I wish I could answer that. I provide you that answer right now. But I can't. So it seems like a good idea. I can't tell you if it was purposely left out. So I'm sorry I can't shed any light on that.
Mr. Chair, the bill goes to finance next, and I would ask the sponsors to work with Mr. Davis and attempt to accommodate that in the Finance Committee. I personally would like to see our members, our Alaskans, protected in this area. And I do have one other question.
On the immediate issue, Mr.
Sure.
Chairman?
Yes.
On the immediate issue, Mr. Chairman, I am happy to commit that on the way to the Finance Committee, I will, on behalf of the sponsors, work with the Division of Banking and Securities and with the industry to protect the security of personal financial records to prevent identity theft under the Act.
And I have one other question.
Yes.
Is there any provision in the Act, since it's a Uniform Act, if one of these organizations, these companies, is found to be fraudulently acting in State A, that other states are immediately informed of that so they can take action? Through the chair, to anybody on the line or here.
If you don't mind, through the chair, this is Mr. Davis. Once this act is passed, and that's why I think it's very important to pass it, because we're one of the few states that is not part of the membership that tracks this industry, a couple of things will happen. First, these companies should be registered with the U.S. Department of Treasury Financial Crimes Enforcement Network, which is commonly called FinCEN. We have checked the FinCEN register and have determined that there are companies operating in Alaska that have not registered as they should. Through that tracking system, we can track bad operators. And that also helps the good operators. I want to emphasize that not only does this help consumers, but it also should help the small companies that Senator Elton wanted also to assist, because right now some of them are having a very difficult time obtaining banking. because of a concern with money laundering. And if this act is passed, I think it will help them reduce their costs and do better business.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Mr. Davis. The chair will entertain a motion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move the CS for House Bill number 227, version E, with attached physical notes and individual recommendations.
Thank you. Without objection, we appreciate it. Man, you're very talented. You did an excellent job. And thank you very much for helping us through House Judiciary. It was a good issue for us to take a look at. Are there any other issues here?
Oh, yes.
Representative Gruenberg is interested, and I assume that his office will volunteer to draft a letter for this committee's consideration addressed to the Board of Regents to recommend that they develop an internal policy. It'll be private and quiet, and you'll draft it, and we will review it, and then perhaps the members of this committee, if we're in agreement, will sign off on it.
It would be a motion for you as the chair of the committee to send it on behalf of the committee.
Yes.
And we'll draft that overnight and have it for the morning.
You've got really a few days.
For benefit of the record, I knew nothing about this as sponsor of the committee bill related to this until just now.
Yeah, I apologize.
Okay.
This came up to meet my.
I know. I just say though, if the committee bill that we discussed yesterday.
I'm going to adjourn the committee now.
And I just wanted to put that on the record that I'm unaware of this.
Okay. And we're going to take up House Bill 65 at 8 a.m. Tomorrow, and that'll leave us the full 2 hours to go over the two amendments, any other amendments that have arisen, and then to take testimony from groups that are interested in striking entire sections that don't address specific amendments but address the whole articles in the same manner in which we struck sections 2, 3, and 9 from the RCA bill. I think there's going to be a considerable argument for us to strike whole sections of the personal privacy bill. Thank you. And that's why we've allowed for 2 hours tomorrow so we can have a fair discussion on that subject matter. It's 2:15. I'm delighted to be